Greetings, it's time for Native Sun, the show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Harris Walz campaign hits the ground running in Arizona, by Daniel Herrera Carbajal, writing for ICT on the 9th of October, 2024. In a meeting with more than a dozen tribal leaders in the battleground state of Arizona, Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz vowed that a Kamala Harris administration would keep a seat at the table for tribal nations in Washington, D.C. In a unifying message that touched on the importance of the Native vote, he said the Harris-Walz campaign would build on the gains made by tribal nations over the last 4 years. "We're not going back to the way it was," Walz said, hitting a common theme in the Democratic campaign against the former Republican President Donald Trump and his vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance. "I feel it across the Indian country that people know this is an opportunity to keep this momentum going forward," he said. "This is an opportunity that many of us have waited lifetimes for, to finally see that we're seeing sovereignty as absolute truth." As early in-person voting began Wednesday, October 9th, in Arizona, Walz touched on the importance of the so-called Native Wall of voters who could help swing the tight race in a state where President Joe Biden beat Trump by a margin of just 10,500 votes in the 2020 election. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis joined Tono Otham Nation Chairman Verlin Joes and Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya in greeting Walz, who is currently the governor of Minnesota. Walz then shook hands and spoke with the other tribal leaders and their guests. Walz also touted the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris administration in working with tribal nations, including the reestablishment of the White House Council on Native American Issues, and what he called the largest investments in tribes we've seen in American history. "We work hand in hand in that vote that we want to earn," said Walz, who is currently the governor of Minnesota. "You earned that by policies you put in place." The gathering Wednesday came amid campaign swings by both the Republican and Democratic presidential candidates through Arizona. Walz continued on from the Gila River community to Tucson, where later Wednesday he and Vance held dueling campaign events. Vice President Harris, the Democratic presidential nominee, is scheduled to hold a rally in Phoenix Thursday, while Trump is set to hold a rally Sunday in the Republican stronghold of Prescott Valley, about 90 miles north of Phoenix. Campaign officials said the Arizona campaign will be among the most expensive tribal organizing efforts, with events scheduled throughout the state. Walz reminded tribal leaders Wednesday of the work that has been done across Indian country by the Biden-Harris administration. Many of the projects funded over the last 4 years are already coming to fruition, including the Casablanca Solar Panel Project by the Gila River Indian community, which aims to battle water loss and boost tribal sovereignty by producing its own power. Walz shifted to his home state of Minnesota, saying he and Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, White Earth Band of Ojibwe, have worked closely with tribal communities. Flanagan and Interior Secretary Deb Haaland of Laguna Pueblo have been campaigning in Arizona for the Harris-Walz campaign. Walz emphasized the importance of having Native voices at the table and establishing connections with tribal nations. "If the children of our tribal nations are doing well, everyone's doing well," Walz said. Many of the tribal nations represented at the meeting are small nations that often have had little to no say in political and economic matters in Indian country. Roland Maldonado, chairman of the Kaibab Paiute tribe, a small nation in northern Arizona, spoke with Walz about rural communities and the indifference historically shown to them. "It was encouraging, continuing to build on the government-to-government relations and really understanding the needs of rural communities, and understanding and accepting things that are, you know, historically missing," Maldonado said. And he understands the negative impact of that missing component of our history as a country and as individual Native communities. Irvin Jackson, president of the Nal Nishi Federation of Labor, issued a statement saying the Walz meeting with tribal leaders once again highlighted the stark contrast between the presidential tickets. Throughout their careers and on the campaign trail, Vice President Harris and Governor Walz have demonstrated deep respect for indigenous peoples. Championing our rights, our sovereignty, and our cultural heritage, said Jackson, who is a Shihi Salt people, born for Torichini, Bitter Water Clan. Trump's presidency brought land loss, worsened health disparities, and challenges to our sovereignty, he said in the statement. Another term under Trump would be devastating. The Naunishi Federation is the only AFL-CIO federated body in the U.S. representing indigenous families in the Navajo Nation region. This article contained information from the Associated Press. It was Harris-Walz campaign hits the ground running in Arizona. This next is an opinion piece that was printed in the Navajo Times. It was published on the 4th of October, 2024. A Navajo perspective, why many of us support Trump over Harris. By Francine Bradley Arthur. The editor's note says the writer is an organizer and co-founder of Freedom House from St. Michael's, Arizona. She has 20 years of experience as a police officer and is passionate about advocating for economic empowerment, public safety, and cultural preservation. As the founder of Freedom House in St. Michael's, Arizona, I've seen firsthand how those decisions in Washington, D.C. impact our lives. While some tribal bureaucrats run cover for Biden-Harris, many of us on the ground know that Donald Trump, along with leaders like Eli Crane and Carrie Lake, have done more to support our communities and align with our true Navajo values. In Navajo culture, life is sacred, including life in the womb. Our holon is shaped like the mother's rounded belly. Trump's administration upheld pro-life values that resonate deeply with our traditions. This is one of the reasons I continue to support Trump and Eli Crane and Carrie Lake, who share these values and understand the importance of protecting life at all stages, from birth to keeping fentanyl out and keeping crime out of where we live through public safety. On the other hand, Democrat policies often seem out of step with our cultural beliefs, particularly regarding issues of life and family. Under Trump's leadership, Native American communities saw real gains in economic opportunities. His administration focused on policies that promoted job creation, home ownership, and financial independence, critical factors in breaking the cycle of reliance on federal aid. Trump's vision for a strong economy, supported by domestic energy production, is what we need to keep gas prices low and make life more affordable for our families. As a retired police officer, public safety is a critical concern for our communities, especially with the high rates of violence against Native women and children. Trump's administration took meaningful steps to address these issues, such as signing the Ashland Mike Amber Alert and Indian Country Act and creating a task force for missing and murdered Native Americans. Those actions show a true commitment to protecting our people. Trump's administration modernized the National Environmental Policy Act to ensure that tribes had a voice in environmental decisions. He also addressed long-standing ecological issues like the Navajo abandoned uranium mines, which had been ignored for too long. His support for tribal sovereignty, through actions like the Progress for Indian Tribes Act, gave us greater control over our own resources and futures. Congressman Crane secured an EPA waiver for a critical water project, expediting the enhancement of drinking water and clean water systems in Navajo and Apache counties after two wells collapsed in northern Arizona last summer. Further, Eli Crane has supported our Water Rights Settlement Act, a commitment I see echoed in the policies of Carrie Lake. As Attorney General of California, Kamala Harris opposed at least 15 tribal land-into-trust applications, actions that undermined Indian nations' ability to reclaim lands lost to theft, fraud, and other negative policies. This lack of respect for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is deeply troubling, and is one of the reasons many of us do not support her candidacy. Like many in our community, I was thrilled to hear that RFK Jr. endorsed Trump. This endorsement shows that people across the political spectrum recognize Trump's positive impact on our nation, including in Indian country. It's a powerful reminder that Trump's message of empowerment and self-determination resonates with many, regardless of party affiliation. While the national elections are critical, we must also focus on our local council elections. These leaders make decisions that directly affect our daily lives, and we must elect people who share our values and will fight for our communities. I also want to remind everyone that if you're a registered Democrat, you can still vote for Republicans on the ballot. It's about choosing the best leaders, regardless of party, who will stand up for our people and our future. As a Navajo woman and organizer, I'm not alone in supporting Trump, Eli Crane, and Carrie Lake, because they represent the leadership that will truly benefit our people. They understand the importance of economic independence, public safety, and respect for our values. Their policies offer a future where Navajo communities are empowered to thrive, not just survive. As we approach the upcoming elections, I encourage everyone to think critically about who will best serve our needs and honor who we are as we the people. That was an opinion piece in the Navajo Times by Francine Bradley Arthur, Why Many of Us Support Trump Over Harris. You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing audio access to print information for over 40 years. Learn more at our website sunsounds.org, where you can listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand. Additionally, download our app, which you can find in your normal app stores and you can use to listen to individual episodes or live streams as well. From Grist, Indigenous voters worry a Harris presidency means endangering sacred lands. This is by Taylor Don Stagner, and it was published on the 7th of October, 2024. At an August rally in Glendale, Arizona, the rowdiness of the crowd suggested a rock star was about to take the stage. Instead, a booming voice welcomed the spectators with a full-throated endorsement of Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris. "She's the right person at the right time to be our country's 47th president." The voice belonged to the governor of the Gila River Indian community, Stephen Rowe Lewis, a tribal leader who helped resolve long-overdue water rights in the state for the tribe last year. Skodin. Later on, after a warm-up speech from running mate Tim Walz, Vice President Harris took the stage, saying she would always honor tribal sovereignty and respect tribal self-determination. On her campaign website, she maintains she will work to secure America's industrial future by investing in clean energy. But clean energy development often negatively impacts sites on federal lands that are sacred to indigenous peoples. The Biden-Harris administration has been one of the most supportive of Native peoples, investing millions of dollars of federal funding for climate resilience and green energy initiatives. Still, the indigenous vote for Harris in 2024 is far from assured. While the U.S. has big goals on its path to a clean energy future, those plans have to compete against the preservation of tribal lands, an issue Harris has stumbled over in her political career, dating back to her time as California's Attorney General. Almost 80 miles east of the Arizona rally, a sacred site is in danger. Oak Flat, a swath of national forest land in the high desert, has been an important spiritual site for tribes like the San Carlos Apache for centuries, and is used for ceremonies and gathering medicines like sage, bear root, and greasewood. Yet the area is under threat. Rio Tinto, an international mining company, has been fighting to put a copper mine there for more than a decade. Oak Flat is home to one of the planet's largest undeveloped copper reserves, and the metal is critical to making the electric batteries necessary for the shift to cleaner energy sources. To reach its goal of 80% renewable energy generation by 2030, and carbon-free electricity 5 years after that, the U.S. needs big investments and robust policy support. While Harris says she's the candidate in the best position to achieve those goals, there's a concern among indigenous communities that doing so will continue to exploit tribal homelands. Most of the minerals needed for the energy transition are located within 35 miles of tribal communities, on lands originally stolen from them. "They definitely are hard to do at the same time. That's the conflict," said Dove Korf Korn, an attorney at the Lakota People's Law Project and Sacred Defense Fund. Of the balance between extracting the minerals critical to the energy transition and protecting tribal lands where many such minerals are located. He mentioned that Harris has few environmental policies of her own to critique, and that policy-wise, the broader Biden-Harris administration has been a mixed bag. During her tenure as vice president, Harris has been party to the administration's push to produce more oil and gas than ever, despite promises to halve greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. Last year, the Biden administration also gave the green light to the Willow Project, an $8 billion project, drilling operation, that is, on Alaska's North Slope that some, but not all, tribes were against. Throughout her presidential campaign, and in a reversal of her previous stance, Harris has showed support for fracking. During Harris's time as Attorney General of California, she argued against tribes putting land into trust, a process that can protect land, as well as allow economic development like casinos where gambling might be banned, claiming the situation only applies if a tribe was under federal jurisdiction when the Indian Reorganization Act was passed in the 1930s. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against Harris and the state, but had she won the case, about 100 tribes in California would not have been allowed to benefit from trust lands. Still, Lael Echohawk, who is Pawnee and an expert in tribal law, says Harris's decisions as attorney general aren't reflective of what she might be capable of as president. She pointed out that as attorney general, Harris helped pass a red flag law in California to take away firearms from people deemed dangerous. Plus, she called on the U.S. Congress to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act, an issue important in Native communities where women go missing and are the survivors of violence at a rate higher than the national average. Echohawk also knows of tribes concerned with border issues and immigration that are endorsing Harris. "These are important issues that I think better demonstrate her commitment to advancing and protecting tribal sovereignty," Echohawk said. But for Nick Estes, a member of the Lower Brule Sioux tribe and professor at the University of Minnesota, Harris might just be a continuation of the Biden administration, which he maintains has taken advantage of tribal lands. "As it stands today, 1.6 million surface and subsurface acres of land within 83 reservations have non-natives benefiting from oil, gas, and mining operations, among other extractive industries." "You can't just have a vibes-based environmental policy. It actually needs to be concrete," said Estes. "What we've seen is just service to industry at the expense of native lands and livelihood." And that was Indigenous Voters Worry a Harris Presidency Means Endangering Sacred Lands. Here's another piece, not quite an opinion piece, but maybe a thought piece, called The Native Vote Dilemma. It was published in High Country News on the 1st of October, 2024, written by B. Toasty Oster. In Indian country, major election years bring a deluge of messaging that voting is sacred, as then-Congresswoman and current Interior Secretary Deb Haaland said during the 2020 Democratic National Convention. The push to get out the native vote is strong. It's sometimes credited for swinging the 2020 election for Joe Biden. Every election cycle, native communities and individuals grapple with a web of dilemmas. Are polling stations accessible? Are any of the candidates not directly hostile to Indigenous interests? Is voting in American elections compatible with Native cultural value systems? And ultimately, is it even worth doing? This year marks the centennial of the Indian Citizenship Act, which theoretically gave Native people the right to vote in U.S. elections, though it was several decades before all 50 states actually honored it. But U.S. citizenship and the right to vote in U.S. elections are not universally celebrated by Native people. The Haudenosaunee Confederacy rejected imposed U.S. citizenship as treasonous and even now considers it a violation of international law. As citizens of the Six Nations, they do not necessarily seek dual citizenship. Indigenous history shows that citizenship and voting rights can actually be a defeat instead of a victory. They assimilate natives and face them with candidates who are unlikely to support Indigenous liberation. Given this reality, not all natives embrace participation in American electoral political theater or see it as wholesome and constructive. Among those who eventually rejected the right to vote in U.S. election was the late Diné writer, activist, and hardcore musician Klee Benali. In his 2023 book, No Spiritual Surrender, Indigenous Anarchy in Defense of the Sacred, he argued that voting is simply maintaining our own oppression. The native vote, he said, is an assimilationist tool for solving the Indian problem, employed only when the U.S. military couldn't fulfill its genocidal programs. During the fraught 2020 election year, Benali published a zine called Voting Is Not Harm Reduction, which appeared as a chapter in his 2023 book. In online conversations, he ruffled feathers, but also drew in others who shared his sentiments. Benali passed away just after his book was published, and quickly sold out as the 2024 election year began. Benali rejected voting entirely. "Liberation cannot be found in the occupier's ballot box," Benali wrote. "No matter who you vote for," he concluded, "settler colonialism wins." Meanwhile, Indigenous people who want to participate in U.S. elections still face rampant voter suppression. Jacqueline DeLeon of Isleta Pueblo, staff attorney at the Native American Rights Fund, co-authored the 2020 report Obstacles at Every Turn, which outlines barriers to Native voting. These include long distances to polling stations, which may be off-reservation, or requiring proof of a home address in areas where legislators know some rural natives would not have it, a strategy DeLeon compares to Jim Crow literacy tests. Government gets its legitimacy, under some theories, through the consent of the governed, DeLeon explained, nodding to language in the Declaration of Independence. And you express your consent through participation, even though you're born into a system that's largely outside your control. America is both this colonizing impulse, designed to protect a few in power and retain its systems of power, and it's a system that is designed to allow folks to engage and obtain power for themselves. It does both of these things simultaneously, DeLeon said. For her, having that fair chance is essential before people can decide whether they want to engage. Owing to voter suppression, we haven't received a full and free and fair invitation to participate in the American system to begin with, she said. Until that happens, I just don't think that question is ripe. Both DeLeon and Nick Tilson, Oglala Lakota, president and CEO of NDN Collective, pointed out that voting can create better conditions under which to organize. We can be building towards the nationhood of tribal communities while at the same time voting in our local elections so that our sacred sites don't get destroyed, Tilson said. In America's flawed, inequitable, and corporation-infiltrated version of democracy, he sees voting as a tactic. We can be doing multiple different tactics. In fact, Tilson was doing that the day I spoke to him, organizing protests at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in solidarity with those demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. He was there with NDN Collective's Director of Policy and Advocacy, Janine Yazzie Diné. They had protested at the Republican National Convention the previous month. Our strategies don't begin and end at the ballot box, and don't begin and end with the two-party system, said Yazzie. Partisan discourse, she said, is just smoke and mirrors. In his book, Benali points out that resource colonialism was and continues to be a bipartisan effort. In this context, the two parties are nearly indistinguishable, both being allegiant masters of settler authority. Even if a native casts tactical votes in state and local elections, what are they to do when faced with the kind of devil's bargain federal elections present? Pressure to vote is noticeably high this year, a whirl with vote blue no matter who to save democracy. Our people don't deserve that messaging, Yazzie said. When has this democracy worked for us? She laughed. Benali wrote that pressuring non-voters is paternalistic and reflects the fragility of American democracy. Policing civic engagement through shame and victim blaming is a debasing tactic, he wrote. He called voting as harm reduction the government-issued blanket of the Democratic Party. To heal, he said, we have to end the harm, not lessen it, and restore healthy and just relations with Mother Earth and all her beings. Radical language can sometimes fracture communities and families, but De Leon, Yazzie, Tilson, and Benali himself seem to agree. The whole point of asking these questions is to find a healing path toward unity and freedom. We all have to acknowledge that we're starting from a position of pain, De Leon said. Here I am, advocating for America in some sense, and at the same time I'm fighting, day in and day out, hostile state and county governments that are denying basic civil rights. It takes work to reconcile these contradictions, she added. Benali expressed weariness at fighting for inclusion in settler society. Why not fight to end the entirety of their violent global project? Why not fight for liberation? According to Yazzie, focusing too narrowly on voting versus not voting is missing the bigger picture. I don't think voting is sacred. I think our resistance is sacred, she said. She called Native resistance both a gift from our ancestors and a prayer for the next 7 generations. That's where real unity comes up, not whether we all decide to vote or not, but what we decide we're working towards. That was the Native Vote Dilemma. You've been listening to Native Sun, the show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Music is Land Back by Hallucination.